Hey everybody, in this episode of the Comic Book Exchange, we're going to talk about Batman and Harley Quinn again. Maybe we'll talk about some other stuff. It all depends on how angry I get. Let's do it.
This is Book Circle Online, featuring in-depth discussion, insight, news, and commentary on all the world's leading book titles and their authors. And now, Book Circle Online.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Comic Book Exchange here on Book Circle Online. Of course, this is the show where we get around and we discuss all kinds of stuff that's comic book related. Maybe films, maybe terrible films. We do that a lot. We also talk sometimes occasionally to the creators responsible for all these great comic periodicals that you read either at your local comic book store every Wednesday, or maybe get them at your digital storefront any time of the day or week. I'm one of your hosts, Frank Moran. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at HappyGoJackie.
And I'm Lacretia Lyon, guys. You can always find me at LacretiaLyon anywhere on the internet, since there is only one.
And I am Lex Michael. I am all over social media at the Lex Michael. And because we made the grievous error of allowing the valve to open last week, I expect the hate to continue to flow freely this week from one Frank Moran.
It's a vein that's it's a deep running vein. We've tapped it. Let's mine it for all it's worth. But of course, folks, you can like us on Facebook. Give us those 5 stars on iTunes, because Lex Michael needs them, folks.
The bit as persistent as Frank Moran's anger.
That's true. Absolutely. So keep Lex alive. Keep those 5 stars reviews coming. You can also subscribe to the YouTube channel. Give us a big thumbs up while you're there. And of course, you see Lucretia's got her computer here, which means the chat is up and running. So feel free to jump in, share your thoughts about comic books in general, or anything that we may be talking about this episode, which, you know, maybe just maybe a little bit of Batman or Harley Quinn. Just a skosh, perhaps. Well, let's not even pretend that I'm going to talk about anything else for the moment.
This could be the whole hour couldn't it? This could be.
So, of course, we all know my feelings. If you don't know my feelings and you'd love to know my feelings about Batman or Harley Quinn, the latest DC Direct video film, you can check that out last episode. And many other times before that, anytime it's brought up, I turn into an angry person.
But if you do tune in, there we go. That's the term.
Yeah.
Professional. If you do tune in to the previous episode, you will hear Frank continually try to box me into saying something mean about this motion picture. I think I held my own. I think I was able to do-si-do around the walls you were trying to build around me.
You did an admirable job, Lex Michael. I don't think I'm not going to let you get away that easily, though.
No, he's going to try and box both of us in.
That's right. This week. I will get you to give it up.
I don't really care so much about people liking me, so.
I feel like I want to be like Darth Sidious. Just like, give in to your hate.
Lex. I don't need Bruce Timm kicking in my door.
What do you think the chances of that are?
Doors are expensive, Frank.
That's true. And Bruce Timm's strength is mighty.
He is known to have a powerful foot.
Yeah. I wish he had more powerful writing sense for this film.
That's so mean. Sense. It's so personal.
Well, let's not even waste any more time. Of course, Lex has seen it, and we talked all about his thoughts and me trying to get him to admit that it's a terrible film last week. Now, Lucretia has finally seen it as well. She took the bullet, and she joins us now to share her thoughts about Batman and Harley Quinn.
Well, I mean, of course, I had to be in the right mindset. And if you guys know what that means, I had to take my medicine, as we call it in California, so that at least I didn't dislike it that much. So, you know, I was prepared watching it, you know. And there was one scene I will call out as being funny, and then the rest of it, I'm totally with you. Okay. Garbage.
All right.
The one scene that was funny was when they are in the car and Booster Gold calls in. Yeah, and Nightwing is making faces, you know, about everybody he's talking about, and then crumbles the paper to, oh, yeah, we're going, even Batman gets involved. He's like, yeah, we're going through some
That part was funny. Thank you, Jeff. Yes, I will admit, I will go with you on that scene. That scene is all right. I felt like that, I will accept that kind of humor with Batman and Nightwing. I feel like that is the kind of stuff that I feel like you can push the character with and do a new, explore from a different angle, as opposed to doing the other various terrible things they did with Batman and Nightwing during the course of this film.
Yeah, I'm like, no offense to the actor playing Nightwing, but I didn't feel like that was Nightwing. And that was the thing, is, like, who is this? This is not my Dick Grayson.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I feel like Nightwing, at least in the Bruce Timm verse, has never really been explored that much.
Yeah.
We had him as Robin, then he took off for a while, and he showed up a little bit occasionally in the new Batman Adventures as Nightwing. But I feel like you probably saw more of him, like, in, Under the Red Hood. You probably saw more of him in that one. And so you keep thinking, like, I wanted him to sound like Neil Patrick Harris.
Yeah, he was. It was NPH in Under the Red Hood. I remember, I'm trying to think now, I think I remember more of Tim Drake Robin from that universe. Like, I know Dick Grayson Robin was around for the entire, like, the first iteration of that show. But most of what I remember is him being really mad at Tony Zucco, and then him being really mad that Batman doesn't want him to kill Tony Zucco, and then at the end of the story, they're friends.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much all I remember.
Yeah, and too, probably because I love Neil Patrick Harris so much, and Under the Red Hood was such a good thing, because Jensen Ackles was Jason Todd. But yeah, that's the thing, is like, oh, that was such a good movie, and then I love the character of Nightwing, and I'm like, okay, he's just a bumbling moron in this, and that's not Dick Grayson. And I thought Melissa Rauch was good as Harley Quinn, but at the same time, I just felt like this was not a good story for her, for them, and what a waste of Padgett Brewster. I mean, Poison Ivy is rarely seen and doesn't even really have a motivation for what's going on. You know, it was very haphazard. It's almost like they were writing for General Hospital or something.
Yeah, it's I don't know why they bring back Kevin Conroy, even killing Joker, brought back Mark Hamill as a Joker. Mm-hmm. Arlene Sorkin wasn't approached for Harley Quinn this time. Maybe she retired from
Arlene Sorkin, to my knowledge, hasn't been Harley Quinn for a while. I think Tara Strong
was who I thought it was.
And done. Like, I know in the Arkham games, it's Tara Strong, even though they bring back Kevin Conroy.
And in Justice, both of them, it's Tara Strong, yeah.
Hmm. I'd rather have seen Arlene Sorkin. Let's bring her back.
I miss Arlene Sorkin's voice. Like, you can tell, much like when they swap out Muppet performers, you can tell a little bit if you've got a discerning ear. I think Tara Strong did a great job.
Hers is very close to Arlene's.
I think she did a really great job stepping into that role. Melissa Rauch, I am reserving judgment on, because I feel like we were waiting on a Harley Quinn story. Still, look at Frank's face. He's so waiting. He's hoping that I've just boxed myself in. No. Let's see if I can jump out of this box. I feel like we're still waiting on a more, let's say, a traditional Harley Quinn story, something that harkens back in a way that I think we expected this movie to, harkens back to that original animated series run, and then I think I will get a better idea of how I feel about Melissa Rauch in the role. There are moments in Batman and Harley Quinn where I found myself going, oh, yeah, I think she could do a really great job in the right story.
Yeah, too bad there wasn't enough of those moments in this film.
But Swamp Thing was there for a second. That made me feel better.
Oh, yeah, I know. And again, it was a waste of Swamp Thing.
It was. If you're going to tease this whole thing throughout the course of the film and, like, give somebody a new character that they're excited to see in the Bruce Timm-verse, or the this is what you do with it, it's just terrible.
But, like, honestly, I'm a simple creature at times, and all I really need is Swamp Thing to show up for, like, 5 seconds, go, the green.
Great.
And then just peace back into the trees.
Garbage.
That's all I need. It's all I need in this life, Frank.
You know, I have to be,
your other left.
My other left. I'm going to be sitting in some people's laps during the course of the show. Yes, absolutely. We're getting very close and intimate during the course of the show. I feel like with Harley Quinn, I feel like Deadpool. If I had to choose between the two, I guess I'm going with Deadpool slightly over, but I feel like a little of them goes a long way with me.
Agreed.
Sorry. I know. We all know how I feel about Deadpool. If you've ever been to my house, you know how I feel about Deadpool.
But I feel like those are two characters, both from Marvel and DC, that really the fans really resonated with. And then publishers said, like, all right, let's not just give them one series. Let's give them three or four series and get them as in many places as we can.
It's been a while since I've read a comic story featuring Harley Quinn where she felt like the version of the character that I was familiar with, that I prefer. And I think Harley Quinn, too, especially because of her relationship with the Joker, she can be, especially if she's a focal point of the story, that can get real weird as far as how are we, even just using that one relationship as an example, how are we addressing how unromantic and abusive and dark this relationship is. And I think if you're in Harley's point of view, because she doesn't quite see it as much, we don't quite see it as much. And there's an interesting way to tell a story through that prism where it is really dark and abusive and she doesn't see it. But I feel like we don't get that story. We get that version of Harley doing, you know, hanging out with the Suicide Squad or leading. What does she even do in her own book now? I'm not sure.
I've tried to read the first. I just couldn't really get into Harley Quinn as a lead in her own series. It just wasn't doing much for me.
She works great as a supporting player, like a strong, like a prominent supporting player. But yeah, as the primary, as the protagonist, as your POV character that you're following, has never really worked that well for me either.
And two, I don't know why people thought it would. It's very much, like, I'll use this as an example, because it was a show that was good, but I think they got off right at the bat. I like Zooey Deschanel, and when Zooey Deschanel does what she does, like, on a show like New Girl, that's great. But that is not something you can anchor a show around. That's why it became a ensemble show. And I kind of see Harley Quinn is sort of like the Zooey Deschanel of the DC universe, where that's a great character, but that is not a lead character.
No, yeah. I think I like her better when she's more of like the Gotham Sirens kind of story, yeah, where she gets to bounce off Poison Ivy, or you can bring in Catwoman.
Yeah.
Yes, then I enjoy that more. But her as the main driving force of the story, I really get tired of her really quickly. And I feel like if I have to choose between the two, I guess Deadpool is a little bit better. He can lead his own story, and it's good. But sometimes the whole cracking wise and breaking the fourth wall can get a little annoying to me. But at least I feel like he can still lead a series on his own.
Yes. Plus, his movie had more F curses in it.
And his movie is one of the greatest movies of all time. Oh, yeah.
There you go. Yeah. But at least he had the courtesy just to do a silent flatulation, as opposed to Harley Quinn, and just let it ride. In Batman versus Harley Quinn. Or whatever, Batman Harley Quinn. Oh. Batman Harley Quinn versus my sanity. That's what it should be named.
It's an assault on Frank's sense of taste.
It was just, oh, man. All right. What are the chances are you either you're ever going to go back and watch this film again?
Never. I got to delete it off my computer.
I feel like you would take it so personally that I almost want to do it just so I can come back and tell you I did.
Yeah. The only reason I would rewatch it is we could watch it all together and just have your commentary.
And honestly, I would just I would just do it as a live stream, but it would, the camera would just be on you. It would be a single the entire time.
That's not a pleasant thought for anybody.
And the movie would play in the background almost like a reverse commentary on your facial expressions. And whatever, like angry.
I have that set up. If we want to make this happen,
it'll be just a. Yeah. Oof, nobody's gonna watch this live stream, guys. Let's just admit that.
No one watches this live stream either. But we still do it. Yeah,
that's true.
Oh dear.
Self burn.
It's true.
Well, all right. Let's at least, as much as I would love to keep going down this rabbit hole, and who knows, I reserve the right to always go back to the Batman and Harley Quinn film.
There will be a weekly segment from now on where you get a solid 5 minutes to reminisce on how angry this motion picture makes you.
Yeah. For a second, when Lucretia said, like, I bought it and I watch it, there was part of me that was like, should I just buy it? And just so I can watch it again.
Oh, I didn't buy it. I didn't spend any money on it. Let's just say.
All right.
How, like, when you're having a really stressful day and some people burn that stress off by, like, going to the gym, or maybe they, like, hit a punching bag a little bit. That's your version of that. When you need to vent and let off steam and just release a lot of aggression and energy, you'll just throw that on and scream and yell and throw shit at or around your TV. There we go. That's going to be you versus your very own television.
And then I laugh because I was like, I'm never going to pay anything for this movie. And I think about all the movies that I have paid for. That's how bad this was. And while I loved them, most people didn't. Like, I like Sorority Boys and crap like that, but I wouldn't buy that movie. That's how bad it was.
Well, Bruce Timm, if you're listening, I still respect your legacy.
Wow, you know, I respect his legacy. I feel like he doesn't respect his own legacy. Why? He didn't. This is a shame. I respect him more than he does at this point.
Send all cease and desist orders to Frank Moran at Happy Go Jackie on Twitter.
There you go. Yes, I feel your scorn, and I accept that, internet.
And if you have watched this movie, please send at Happy Go Jackie all of your thoughts.
Yes, please tell me why you enjoyed this film, and then let me tell you why you're wrong. I would welcome that opportunity. Let me do that for you.
Oh dear.
Oh, it's such a when Bruce Timm, like, finally, like, they put a picture lock on that thing and he walked away, I can't imagine him saying, like, was he high-fiving him? We're like, nailed it, guys. I can't imagine that situation happening.
He was lighting a cigar with a dollar bill.
Clearly.
It makes me feel like in that moment in Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, when they're doing Good Will Hunting 2, hunting season, and Gus Van Zandt is just sitting over there like, you know, I'm busy, Ben.
So, action, yeah. Gus? Yeah. Jesus, Ben, I said I'm busy.
Just
you're a true
bills,
artist,
y'all.
Gus.
Yeah.
But this is already, like, two disappointing films that Bruce Timm has kind of overseen. It makes me worried about Gotham by Gaslight. That's I enjoyed the original.
Is he overseeing that one?
I believe so, yeah, isn't he? He's kind of like the executive producer.
I mean, I'm sure he'll get some type of credit, but I don't know how involved he actually is. So here's what I want to ask, right? Let's spin this, right? There's so much venom flying in all directions. Yeah. What is your, both of you, what is your favorite DC animated movie? With the exception of, I feel like, in the interest of a wider variety, maybe we put, like, Mask of the Phantasm over here somewhere.
Because that's the best one.
I agree. So let's put Mask of the Phantasm off to the side. It's in its own special little box. What, after Mask of the Phantasm, would be your favorite DC animated movie?
You know, it's like, there are part of me, and I guess I'm going to, just as we're talking about Mask of the Phantasm, I will go off for a moment. While I enjoy the movie, it doesn't quite, it, there's always a little bit of me that's always kind of like disappointed. Like, the animation is not as good as I want it to be. And it always, for me, that kind of just takes away from my full enjoyment of that picture.
But it felt very much like they just took the same animation and art style from the animated series and made it widescreen.
Yeah, but there are certain episodes, depending on which animation house does it. Like, I think it was TMS. I believe it was one that did a lot of that. One of my favorite one of the episodes, like the second part of the Two-Face episode, or the second part of the Clayface episodes, that where the animation is just
true. Now I'm remembering specifically, like the Clayface episode specifically. Yep. Some of the, even just the transformations alone are spectacular.
Yeah, and so it varies from animation house to animation house how well they can animate
what
these storyboards.
What does TMS stand for?
It's I want to say Tokyo Motion Services or something like that.
Because the first thing that popped into my head was the Motion Society, which sounds like an 80s prog band.
Dude, that sounds really cool.
If you Google the Motion Society and it's not already a band, we should like trademark that immediately. Yeah. We should all learn an instrument.
That's
somebody
true.
Should
all
play
right.
the synth.
So that, I feel like that's your job, Lynn. Lex?
Lynn?
I'm
going
Lynn?
To be Lynn the synth
player.
You
want to be Lynn?
Lynn the synth, yes. Just a lot of super 80s key sounds.
It is TMS Entertainment, which stands for, it looks like Tokyo Movie Shinsha.
Oh.
Anytime they animate anything, whether it's Batman the Animated Series or like there's an old school cartoon called
Animaniacs,
or they did Bionic Six. That's
they
a really like
apparently
old school.
DuckTales,
dude. DuckTales.
A few DuckTales episodes. Like there's some that are fantastic that they've done, like the Lost City of Gold episode. Amazing.
They did Disney's Adventures of the Gummy Bears. Do you guys remember Gummy Bears? Do you remember the theme song to Gummy Bears?
Gummy Bears bouncing here and there and everywhere.
high adventure, Frank. That's beyond compare. They are the gummy bears. If you've made it to the end.
Album in stores on November 13th. Oh my god.
With lots of gummy bears. Nope, that's not it.
That's funny. Well, you guys should definitely watch the new DuckTales.
Oh, wait.
It might be that one.
Yeah. Nope, down. Wait.
My friend Tokes Oligunday is doing
it. It's either that one or the one under it.
This is it, yes.
That's right. There's a whole verse before we get to the chorus. Gummy berry juice. There it is.
That's right. They are the gummy bears.
They are the. In case you made it through the entire animated intro and still weren't sure, they are, in fact, the gummy bears.
So if you go back and you watch like any old 80s or 90s or even like the early 2000s cartoons and you can notice like the really high quality animated versions of those selected episodes out of those series runs, TMS did it. They just always stood out above anybody else that ever animated anything else.
Fair enough. And I see what you mean about the animation. There's definitely nothing as eye-popping as again, like those Clayface changes.
Yeah.
But okay, we went on a digression.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So what would be your answer then if not Mask of the Phantasm?
Do you have one, Lucretia?
I would say I really do like Under the Red Hood.
I figured that's where you would go.
I like Brave and the Bold.
Brave and the Bold. I mean, I love that show.
Yeah, and that's what I think maybe what's wrong with Batman and Harley Quinn is it's like the only Timverse thing since Batman the Animated Series that Michael Rosenbaum didn't do a voice for. So I'm like, yeah, well then screw them. That's why it sucked.
No Rosenbaum. They're missing that Rosenbaum juice. No.
There is, I mean, I guess it was like really like a two-parter for the new Batman and Superman Adventures cartoon that they did. Yeah. When they kind of joined those two series together for like an hour of programming. But they also released it to DVD, like their initial World's Finest crossover.
Is that the one? Is that the one with both Joker and Lex Luthor?
Yes.
Okay. Is that the, now I know there was another episode where they crossed over, but it might have only been a one-off where I think, or maybe it's the same one. Probably not though. Where Bruce has like Brainiac's nanites or something in his brain that got transferred over by phone, or like they were on his phone or something like that, and he held his phone to his head and they got inside him and were controlling him.
Oh, interesting. No, it wasn't that one. This is the one where they learn each other's secret identity.
Yeah, this I do remember, and this was later era, right? Because I remember Joker having the black eyes.
Man, there are some people, I love that redesign. I think it was so much more streamlined. I know some people really love the original one that they did.
See, I'm into that original one. Now, I liked some of the redesigns. But I didn't think I liked every single one of them. Although now I have a hard time remembering which was in which iteration.
I mean, the Scarecrow was like the one that looked more like almost like a Grim Reaper in the redesign.
Yes, that's right.
Which actually was kind of a cool look. He had like the hangman's noose around his neck the whole time.
Yes, yes, yes.
So I kind of like that redesign. I thought that was kind of cool, as opposed to more like just like the accurate kind of Scarecrow.
Well, I feel like now what you see too, like in the Arkham games, for example, you see somewhere in the middle of those two designs.
And Injustice, I was going to mention, like, because that's what I like to play. Yeah, Scarecrow's design is very similar.
I finally got on Injustice 2. And normally I'm not like a big fighting games person, but I fell into it, and a weekend is just gone now.
That's what happened to me. The first weekend, I'm like, I lost an entire day just playing that game. A lot of my characters on level 20, more than I'll care to admit. It's pretty bad.
And then they're also introducing Hellboy.
Yeah.
Into that, right? Which
Injustice? Really? Yes. Okay, so I gotta check out like all of the expansion stuff, but I wish I could just get a package that didn't cost me another $40-some-odd.
Yeah, that's what sucks, is I bit the bullet and bought Starfire, but like with the Red Hood, I didn't really like playing, because you can kind of play with them before like you buy them.
Can
like
you?
Initially in the multiverse, sometimes they'll do that. Like before they come out, you can kind of play. And then I was like, I don't know about these. But I keep hoping that one of those characters is Constantine and the Atom, because they keep trying to tease it. But
yes.
I'm like, oh, now you're saying it could be Hellboy?
Well, I know they're bringing in Black Manta. I know you can get Darkseid now, and you can get Brainiac. Although
I finish
the story mode, right, it tells me, congratulations, you've unlocked Brainiac. And then I go in to use him, and I still have to pay like $6. And I went, why did you tell me this? You have lied to me, game.
That's a glitch, because I won Brainiac, and I can play with Brainiac.
Well, then maybe it's possible if I select it, it'll be like, we were kidding about the $6. Yeah. Here you go.
No, he'll look like
everybody
else.
And I'll be like, why are you? But he does. See, on mine, he doesn't. It told me I unlocked him, and it lied. You lied to me, Injustice 2. It's gonna come back on you. I'm just gonna take the disc, and I'm gonna be like, I'm gonna have it in my hand, and I'm just gonna start bending real slowly, and then I'm gonna remember the thing costs like $50, and I'm going to stop.
Yeah.
Watch out.
Lex, do you have a favorite?
I mean, the one I always go back to is Phantasm, but I mean, there are. I also really love Red Hood. I really like. Probably the two-part Dark Knight Returns, but as the supercut.
Yeah, I haven't watched that whole thing yet.
It's
I need to.
Good.
And there's also the, it was a Crisis on...
Crisis on Two Earths.
Two Earths. Oh, yeah, which I like that.
I like New Frontier a whole bunch.
I felt like that's a tough one, because New Frontier is such a dense book.
I like it mostly for the Martian Manhunter stuff.
Yeah, you know, but I also felt like Darwin Cook is, he's such a fantastic artist, and I just felt like... The animation never quite... It tried to emulate his style, but it just never really got there.
Fair. There are a couple that look a little weird that I like anyway. Like Superman versus the Elite looks a little weird. Like the art style is a little bit weird, but I like that one a bunch.
I've bought it and I've not watched it yet.
I like it. Mm. And I like All-Star Superman as well, even though it feels so condensed compared to the book. It works better for me as a companion piece as opposed to a standalone.
Yeah.
Oh, man. There are a bunch that are just like slipping my mind right now. Like... I liked Justice League Dark a fair amount. That's probably my favorite of the new wave of them, the interconnected ones. That is probably my favorite.
Yeah, I felt like I wanted, you know, maybe it's just because I also was not a huge fan of the new the DC New 52 design for the characters, that when they kind of rebooted it in the directed DVD series, was Justice League War, Justice League, all this, where they introduced Aquaman and the origin of the Justice League. It just never was as good to me.
There's stuff in War that I liked, and there's even stuff in Throne of Atlantis that I liked okay, but overall they didn't do a huge... I never felt involved emotionally like I did with some of the earlier ones that really, like, I felt like really grabbed me. Return of the Joker is also great.
Yes. Oh, no, that, man, that is another one. That is a really, really strong piece. And I remember the time trying to get, like, the bootleg because they had kind of censored it when they released it originally.
That's right.
And so, like, scooping around, why can't I get the uncensored version of this? That was...
I'm trying to think of, like, the ones, because I've owned a few different ones at various times, and I'm trying to think of which ones that I've owned at different times.
And there's also Batman and Robin and Batman versus Robin, which...
I've
not seen either, though. I own them, and I have not watched them.
I feel like, too, they get progressively better. It's like they start to figure out how to tell the types of stories that they're trying to tell in the way that they're trying to tell them. And it's interesting to watch all of them in chronological order because you do see a definite progression, not just in terms of the narrative that they're telling because they're all loosely connected in continuity, but also in their ability to tell these stories effectively. I think that there's one called Bad Blood, which has Batwoman in it, features prominently. And that one, yeah. I think, two, with the exception of Justice League Dark, is probably, in my memory, the strongest one of those.
And there's also Justice League Gods and Monsters. That was the kind of first thing that Bruce Timm did when he came back.
I feel like I missed Gods and Monsters.
Yeah, that's where they basically did like an alternate version. It was an alternate Earth take on the Justice League. So it starts off with, like on Krypton, and instead of Jor-El kind of basically making it when... Kal-El is made up of like a DNA combination of Jor-El and Lara, where basically going back to the old Byrne origin, where it's just like their DNA that intermingles. So instead of letting Jor-El kind of complete that sequence, Zod breaks in, gets rid of Jor-El and says like, nope, this is going to be my kid, and injects his DNA into the mix. And so you see the Superman that comes to Earth is actually a combination of Zod and Lara as opposed to Jor-El and Lara. So a very different type of Superman.
This sounds distressing.
Yeah,
Batman's a vampire.
That's right.
Yep. So there you go.
There was one more. Oh, and I liked the Flashpoint movie a decent amount.
I'd have to go back and watch it. I remember thinking like, it was fine. But also, I also didn't think that the storyline was so great anyway.
Oh, see, I liked Flashpoint. There's a lot that came out of New 52 that I was not deeply enamored with, but I think the Batman stuff was mostly really strong, and actually I think most of the Flash stuff was really strong too, and I think it started in Flashpoint. Honestly, like, that was my big... I had read Flash stuff when I was younger, but I had been away from the character of the Flash for a very long time. Flashpoint was my way back into the Flash mythology, so like for that reason I find it significant.
I felt like the one moment there where, and I think it's like a great visual and a great cliffhanger to have Barry kind of strapping himself into the electric chair to get hit by lightning to reduce his powers, and it doesn't work. And he basically just like almost kills himself. And I'm like, oh, that's a cool cliffhanger, but then he basically says, just put me back in the chair, let me do it again. And like, reading the next issue, I felt like, well, this was just dragging this out. Just for like one cool cliffhanger, you kind of really just kind of slow down the momentum of the story, because basically he just walked right back in and just got shocked again.
Fair, but to that I would say, and honestly, I think that one of the stronger moments in any DC animated movie, and it's something that I really liked in the original story as well, is when Barry comes back from the Flashpoint universe and goes to Bruce with the letter from Thomas Wayne from the other Earth, and Bruce reads it, and you see the tear fall on the letter, and he turns to Barry and he says, "You're one hell of a messenger."
Yeah.
Thank you. And like, oh, dude, every time it like, no, it like seriously affects, it really does affect me in a way that I alluded to. Not many of these recently have affected me much at all. I actually think that was the last time I felt really emotionally affected. Or Dark Knight Returns might have been after that. So it'd probably be Dark Knight Returns. But before that, Flashpoint would be the last one, I think.
Because I felt like, and that even got followed up, did you read the Button crossover between Flash and Batman? And having a chance to see Batman actually meet his father, who kind of takes up the Batman mantle.
Well, now it seems, too, like we're incorporating elements of the Flashpoint universe, like it didn't not happen. But now, right, we're hinting that it was actually Dr. Manhattan and not Barry Allen that was ultimately responsible for the Flashpoint universe. I'm not. I feel like they'll do the Doomsday Clock storyline, and some of these questions might be answered.
And that's the thing, is all that'll come to head in November, because I'm just so excited now that Rorschach's kind of more into the fold.
Well, they revealed the identity of Mr. Oz, I think, today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll be curious to see if that's true, or it's a kind of...
Or, like, if it's true in story.
Yeah, true in story. Is it a misdirect, then it's really something else, but he's trying to make him think...
This seems like the type of thing that'll turn into a misdirect later. This seems... But... Do we talk about it's today? Do we spoil something that came out today?
It is spoilers, guys. Yeah, if you don't want to, just fast forward for about like 2 minutes and then jump back in.
So apparently, and I actually haven't read the issue, but because I have an internet connection, I got this reveal spoiled. But this actually was something that people had been talking about a few weeks ago.
True, yeah. It's so been kind of leaking on various different websites.
So apparently Mr. Oz, this character that's been manipulating events in the DCU since the beginning of Rebirth, and a lot of people speculated, since we're playing with the Watchmen toys now, a lot of people expected, understandably, that it would turn out to be Ozymandias, Adrian Veidt. Apparently, that is not the case. Apparently, it is, in fact, Superman's father, Jor-El, who somehow was not killed in the destruction of Krypton, but is instead existing at times somewhat outside time and space, it seems, and is pulling strings and collecting different people from around the DC universe, including Tim Drake, for purposes, as of now, still unknown. And it does feel like... We get a version of this with almost every character that doesn't have their parents anymore. We get some version of, oh my God, my parent mother slash father slash mother and father are alive all of a sudden. This is incredible. And then things start to get a little weird and things start to get a little dark. And then it comes out that, no, these are not in fact your parents. This is a ruse perpetrated by one of your enemies, if not a completely new enemy that you hadn't considered before. Maybe it's Mr. Mixes Pitlick.
Oh, God, no. No. Please, no.
That's the thing with these, you know, superheroes. It's like, why is your weakness always your parents who died? Like, and that's
to
great.
To be
but
fair,
every time,
that is pretty sad.
It is sad, but it's always like, oh, yeah, this person comes back claiming to be your parent. It's like, don't y'all have the internet in this universe? It's like... Maybe next time your dead parent comes back, you start to question it instead of just being like,
well, the other thing, too, is we've reset the timeline a bunch, so I don't really know how the meta rules work. And I don't mean meta-human. I mean meta in a story sense. Mm-hmm. There were plenty of Flash stories, especially when they were establishing the multiverse initially, where they established very firmly that there are Flash comics in their reality. Yeah. It's just that in Barry's universe, the Flash comics feature Jay Garrick, I believe. It was a different Flash. But comic books exist, at least in some iteration of this universe. You'd think someone was reading comic book stories and would gradually familiarize themselves with the tropes. Now, I don't buy that Batman reads comic books, but I have no problem buying, for example, that Tim Drake would read comic books, or Duke Thomas, a more recent Bat Family inductee.
But don't you think that Batman, as you know, he wants to be the world's greatest detective, he wants to make himself kind of like the ultimate man, that he's got to be good at almost everything.
Especially when you're fighting really gimmick-oriented villains like Joker, Riddler. You'd think you'd want to familiarize yourself with every story trope that there is, if only so that you can deploy your intellect as a weapon in that direction later when you have to.
Batman actually writes all the Wikipedia articles. You know that guy on Reddit? That's Batman.
There you go. Yeah. I was listening to another podcast where they're talking about, do you think Batman vapes? And it's like, he's probably had to learn to vape just to be able to fit in as much as Malone.
I feel like,
Batman.
That's right.
That's because you have to, right? But I feel like for the most part, I feel like he would only actually... I feel like Matches Malone would smoke, but I feel like Batman would have developed a routine to filter out all of the toxins immediately, and then he probably vapes in private because it's easier on the lungs.
Now, as we're talking about parents and stuff, I'm going to go off on a tangent before we get back to Superman and talk about this Action Comic storyline. I feel like as we're talking about Flash, I felt like one of the biggest things that I think has like crippled the Flash as a character lately since they... Like the new 52 has been the fact that his mom has been killed by a Professor Zim, the Reverse Flash, and his attempts to kind of constantly go back and try to save his mom has just been just been like just a boat anchor around that character. Where
because we keep reusing that as a big plot point.
Like, and it's tiresome.
It is undoubtedly a major part of who Barry Allen is and a major part of that history. In much the same way that the Waynes getting shot in that alley is a major defining part of who Batman is.
But that's right from the jump. Like originally, that Barry's mom was fine. That was totally fine. This is like a recent thing that writers put in that now has become such a. It's like a galvanizing focal point of this character that everybody just draws on this.
Which is the thing, right? Even though it's a more recent addition, I make the comparison only to point out that, like, the dead parent thing, or parents plural, with the case of somebody like Batman, or even Superman, who lost his entire family in the destruction of his home planet.
But he had his own Martha.
Stop it. So it's equally defining part of all of their histories, even though it became a defining part of Barry's more recently. But in the case of, say, Batman and Superman, it's a major thing, and we can keep coming back to it, and it's necessary to discuss the psychology of these characters, but not every Batman story is about that.
No.
Not every Batman story includes even a cursory reference to that. And I do feel that, yes, while I don't necessarily think that every single Flash story lately feels like it's about his mom, I feel like we keep going back to that and like beating that drum over and over again more. I agree, more frequently than seems warranted.
And I feel like it's only been exasperated by the TV show, because that has been such a big thing that they've gone to again and again, season after season after season.
Yeah, like, I think we've watched Barry's mom die 3 years in a row.
Enough of it, please. I really hope I would rather see, I don't want any mention of his mom being dead or his dad being dead in this new season. Let's just please, no speedsters, no talking about your parents being dead. Let's just move on.
I want no speedster villains, but yeah. I want John Wesley Shipp's Jay Garrick around all the time.
John Wesley Shipp has to be around all the time. That's cool.
There's an episode of season 3 where I think all of the Flashes that we have Jay Garrick Flash, Barry Allen Flash, and then Wally Kid Flash, and they're all just running around a forest.
Yep.
And watching Jay and Barry run next to each other with, like, Jay's got the helmet and all of it. And it's so preposterous, and I love it so much.
No, that's cool stuff. I want to see more of that for sure.
I want Jay Garrick there every week.
But less of the sad baggage. The sad, because I feel like it makes Barry Allen like such a sad character at points. And I feel like the fun that you liked about Barry Allen is what you saw in the first season of the TV show, and is what you enjoy about like the best issues of that series, when it's not just so mired in the depression of my mom being dead. What can I do to fix this? We're just like, no, let's just have fun and embrace this cool ability that you have.
Yeah, because this is actually one of my favorite CWDC moments, was when there was the crossover and Oliver's torturing a guy with an arrow, and Barry's like, dude, quit. And he's like, oh, I'm sorry, Barry, I watched my parents get murdered in front of me. He's like, so did I, but I don't torture people. He's like, well, I'm just not as emotionally healthy as you. And it's like, that is the thing, is Barry Allen is not Mr. Sad Sack. He is the happy guy. Why aren't we getting that? That was what was so sad about season 3. It's like, not only is Barry a sad sack, but so is Cisco. Jesus, am I watching Arrow?
Flashpoint. Which I love. Flashpoint made everybody sad.
I know.
Ooh, that was terrible. Ugh. Now, to jump back, as you're talking about the Action Comics, Dan Jurgens was saying about like the reveal for this whole storyline about Ozymandias is it's going to make Superman question his place in the world. And that's my least favorite Superman. I feel like that was happening way too much before New 52 happened, where too many promotional pieces for big events would always have Superman crying. He'd always be like holding somebody, or he'd be just like standing there and he'd be weeping. Like, come on, enough crying Superman. Enough.
I was going to say, I really don't understand this need that creators in a bunch of different forms of media, it's not just the comic books. I mean, look at what's happening with the movies lately. A lot of people seem really fixated on this idea of writing an incredibly dark Superman, or a more brooding version of Superman, as if that automatically makes the character cooler, I guess. I don't know what misguided place this is coming from necessarily, but I do think, and I keep coming back to this, and it ties into how a lot of people think the character of Superman is boring or flat. I do think Superman is really challenging to write well, because he is so powerful. That's why I think the least interesting Superman stories for me are the ones where he solves problems by punching them.
Yeah.
I think that's really antithetical to what I understand the purpose of the character to be. Now, I do think, especially given these complex and frankly horrifying times that we're living in, I think there is potentially a lot of merit to exploring what Superman's place in a world that exists the way ours does could be. You can do a lot that's really interesting, but I feel less interested if in that story I'm getting a Superman that has to bend to the darkness that exists as opposed to trying to bend the darkness back towards the light. I feel like then we might as well just tell a Batman story.
Yeah, and that's what I find so frustrating about, like, Man of Steel and then Batman v Superman. And while I have actually gone back, because it's on Hulu now, to give Smallville another chance, because I remember, you know, it came out while Buffy was later on, and I was still watching that network, but I was like, this is not a Superman story that I want to see. Like, this is not even really Superman. But that's why it's good, is what I found, is that it wasn't really a Superman story. It was a Clark Kent learning to be Superman story, and it's all setting that up, and I'm like, this is the Superman I like. He's charming and funny and, you know, kind of nerdy. And I'm like, okay, well, why can't we take that and then do it as Superman now? Like, you know...
True. There are there's a lot of Smallville that I liked, but I felt like that was also a show that got so hamstrung by its premise that it couldn't evolve past it.
No tights,
well,
no flights,
only
dog.
On season one.
Yeah.
So,
but, that, yeah. Ugh, which, oh. I mean, when it got towards the end of the run, when it figured like everybody else was flying, everybody else was doing this, and it took them 10 years to be able to actually finally fly. And you're like, come on.
To be fair, though, that was, when was Smallville on? Like, when was the heyday of Smallville? Because I remember it being on, but it was like early 2000s, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think it was early 2000s, because I remember I was like, Buffy was still on, but it had like been like season 4, I think. So 2001?
So we were still very much in the era of, oh, well, if we're making an X-Men movie, we have to put them all in black pleather because all of this costume stuff, that's too silly. People aren't going to go in for all this costume stuff. This was a good, 10 years removed from the Avengers making $1 billion.
Yeah.
So I get... It was dumb then, just like it's dumb now. But I get, given the context of the way the industry still was viewing comic book stories by and large, I get why they made the decision at the time, but it was silly.
Because I felt like it got so exciting in those last couple seasons, anytime they kind of flash to the future where he kind of exists as Superman, even though you never really got to see him acting as Superman, when you got to see that kind of dynamic of Lois and Clark working at the Daily Planet hand in hand, he's a mild-mannered reporter, I felt like that was a really cool dynamic, and it was a shame that you only got to get quick glimpses of that kind of status quo, as opposed to like, let's just get the series where it is now up to that point and tell stories, because you guys seem like it's so much more fun telling stories than the structure.
But
yeah, because I was going to say, Tyler Hoechlin as Superman is so good. And you're like, I want more of this, want it to impede on Supergirl. Yeah,
that's what I was going to reference. Yeah. It's like cut to a decade and a half later, and you've got an episode of a Supergirl show that's in its second season in which Supergirl, Superman, the Martian Manhunter team up to repel a Daxamite invasion. Like, again, what more do you need in this life but that?
It's... you know, because I felt like Smallville could have the chance to really kind of lead from the front. And, like, by the end, really embrace, like, being a superhero show. But it didn't. I mean, it kind of stayed true to whatever its initial premise was. And then it kind of took Arrow to kind of kind of lead the charge
but
a couple seasons
later.
But
even Arrow took a little bit. Because Arrow had the same, a pretty similar philosophy at the beginning. It's like, we're not going to, it's not a superhero show. It's a drama with archery. And John Barrowman's magic earthquake machine, but we're still super serious. That's why, like, it took me a while to fully embrace Arrow, because I was like, there's serious, and then there is so self-serious that it becomes silly and not the right kind of silly. I think Flash is almost constantly the right kind of silly.
Legends is the perfect kind Legends of silly. But Arrow finally got what it was.
It took a few years, I think, for it to become consistently great. But like this past season, I thought was pretty dang solid.
Well, I kind of like to think like in Showcase, Barry Allen was kind of one that ushered in the new Silver Age of superheroes there. And I guess kind of him in the Arrow universe kind of ushered in the kind of broadened the horizons of what the DC Warner Brothers TV universe could do.
And I'm very much looking forward to the Damian Dark cinematic universe. Yes. Which is just 50 motion pictures starring Neil McDonough. Right. He's not really doing anything specific. We release about 7 of these a year. We make them real cheap. It's mostly Neil McDonough sitting in a room, occasionally waving his hand at something.
And then I'm the only person in the theater watching this shit.
Right, and there's just a big cloud of smoke rising from your seat.
Or just she's eating chocolates, guys. That's what she's doing. Eating chocolates. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to do it for this episode of the Comic Book Exchange. Yet again, we really touched on nothing else that we thought we were going to talk about at the beginning of the show, but I liked for the delightful tangents that we took down this course of this episode. So, do you approve, Lex Michael?
I feel okay about what we accomplished today. Despite Frank Moran's lashing out, I think we did okay. Yeah. We made it.
All right. So, ladies and gentlemen, thanks for joining us for this episode of the Comic Book Exchange. As always, you can like us on Facebook, give us those 5 stars on iTunes, keep Lex Michael alive. He's a national treasure. Let's treat him that way.
Still doing it.
Absolutely. And, of course, everybody can subscribe to the YouTube channel. Thanks for everybody for giving you a nice thumbs up if you go visit the YouTube channel, as well as hopping in the chat, sharing your thoughts about comic books. We'll be back next week at our new time. It's going to be 10 o'clock on Wednesday night. It's 10 o'clock. That's how we're for the Night Owls, for you Night Owl comic book lovers. We're going to be all there for you. There you go, all of you folks. So tune in next Wednesday night at 10 o'clock right here on Book Circle Online, and we'll see you next week. Well, you know what? I'm going to give you – that was rude of me. I was going to just close the show. You know, we should give a chance to people if they want to hear what you guys have to say, and they want to get in touch with you and talk to you about Damien Darhk's film series, you know, maybe do a story pitch. Lex Michael, where can they find you?
If you've got a pitch for the 8th Damien Darhk motion picture releasing in 2019 – you can find me all over social media at TheLexMichael.
And if you want to accompany me to those movies, you can always contact me at LACRETIALYON anywhere on the internet, since there is only one.
That's right. Eat some chocolates with her. You'll enjoy it. Or some mints if you want to freshen your breath. You can follow me at Twitter and Instagram at HappyGoJackie, folks. Until next time, we'll see you back here next Wednesday night at our new time, 10 p.m. right here on Book Circle Online with another new episode of The Comic Book Exchange.
From executive producers Kevin Undergaro, Maria Menounos, and Jeffrey Masters, thanks for tuning in to Book Circle Online. Don't forget to subscribe and leave a comment. To suggest a book title or their author, you can tweet us at Book Circle On. This is Book Circle Online. Thanks for tuning in.